Today on the Pure Sweat Basketball Show.
So which stories do I think are most powerful? Which action items and lessons do I think are most powerful to get my message across?
Maybe I led you to believe it was easy when it wasn't. Maybe I made you think my highlights started at the free throw line and not in the gym.
Turn my headphones up!
Let's eliminate the will to win and think about the will to prepare to win.
That's how winning is done.
It's about being a great teammate. It's about being accountable to one another. It's about being tough. It's about doing the right things for each other, but it's about doing it every day.
This is Reese Davis from ESPN, and you're listening to the Pure Sweat Basketball Show.
Thanks for joining us in our effort to bring timely, relevant microclinics to coaches all across the world. Today's show is brought to you by Dr. Dish, the most advanced shooting machine in the world. This is Rich Sizlowski, and if you've been with us all week, you know this is the final installment of a four-episode series of interviews with our host, Alan Stein. Today we discuss the future for Alan as he takes on an entirely new challenge. Alan, one of your big future endeavors here is to get into the corporate speaking realm as a motivational speaker or a keynote speaker for different events. I know my first impression of you, the first time I saw you speak at a clinic many, many years ago, dating both of us here, was number one, your passion for the topic. Number two was the massive takeaways that I was getting that I could use with my team basically that day if I needed to. And then number three, I noticed your wardrobe. I noticed very bright colors, fresh kicks. You know, it was very clear.
Do you even remember what my hairstyle was then? Because it's changed 20 times
over.
Yeah,
that I can't remember. But I think what I'm getting at is, you know, I've got a few questions on each of those. So for the passion, what drives that passion for what you do, and who instilled that in you?
My passion always goes back to serving other people. Both of my parents were in elementary education for 30 years, which, as you know, teaching is, I mean, the definition of a servant position. So I learned very early that serving other people and helping other people is important. It's important to the world, but it's important to your own fulfillment and satisfaction. And I've been very fortunate for the past 15 years to serve the basketball community and be in that bubble. And I'm not leaving that by any means. I'm very proud of being in the coaching fraternity, and I'll want to serve players and coaches, for a long, long time. But I've also realized that the things I've been privy to and the people I've learned from and worked with and worked alongside have given me some insight that I believe now I can also serve an additional audience, which we can just say is the corporate audience, businesses, organizations, but they could be schools, they could be hospitals, they could be anyone that I believe needs to hear the message of how to improve leadership, team cohesion, mental toughness, and improving culture. And these are all things that the game of basketball has taught me, and now I'd like to take these things and be the conduit to share them in these different industries.
The second thing was the number of takeaways, the things that I could use immediately, the drills and things I could use with my team. How do you keep that up? I mean, obviously, over the years, you've given away a ton of stuff at clinics. You've given away a ton of stuff online and on social media. How do you keep inventing more things, or what's your process for creating content, I guess is a better way to ask that?
Well, I will say, as I enter this new audience, that is by far my biggest challenge. Passion is not going to be the challenge, and the things that I've learned in sharing those aren't the challenge, but turning them into tangible takeaways for these corporate audiences is absolutely my biggest challenge, because my crutch in basketball has always been drills and exercises. I go to a clinic, and I've got at this point, my toolbox of drills is so vast that, I mean, I could do 20-hour clinics, you know, Tony Robbins style, and it wouldn't be a problem. Given the fact that I've never worked a corporate job in my life, I have to really start viewing the world through their lens and figuring out the type of takeaways and tangible things that they need to hear to improve their lives. I have some ideas on what some of those are, but like a lot of things, it's going to take some time and it's going to take a process for me to refine those things, and that will happen through practice. Again, I'm so big on learning from other people, and one of my favorite parts of the coaching fraternity is that we do steal and borrow from each other. You saying that you saw me at a clinic, liked some of the things I shared, and immediately did that with your team is the best compliment I could ever receive. That makes me feel great. Now I need to find those same things to share with corporate entities that they're going to say the same thing. Hey, we had this guy come in and talk to us, and man, he gave me three takeaways that have really improved my productivity here at work, or improved my ability to be a parent, or improved my leadership, what have you. And And I'm working on that now. And I've got some leads on some things that I think are going to work well. I've always believed that sports transcend any industry and that the pillars that I've learned in basketball absolutely unequivocally apply to all different walks of life. But it will, as you pointed out, take some fine tuning on what those actual tangible items will be.
What is it that has driven you to go into this arena?
I just need a new challenge. I need something different. I would never say that I'm burnt out on talking to basketball coaches, because basketball coaches and players give me so much energy. And I think coaching is one of the most altruistic professions there is. I mean, if you're listening to this now and you're a coach, thank you, because you're serving and you're pouring into young people. And I enjoy that, but I'm also ready for a new challenge. I mean, I've been speaking on the basketball circuit for 10 years and I want a new audience and I need a new challenge for myself. I don't feel like, and I say this with all humility, that speaking at basketball clinics now does not challenge me personally the way that it did 5-10 years ago. And I want to find a new audience that will challenge me. As I just alluded to, I'm going into a sector that I've never worked in my life. I have to find ways to connect and translate my message to them. That's a challenge. I know how to speak to basketball coaches now, and I know that the stuff I share with them works. That's been proven. Now I need to do something that's just a little bit different, and I think this new audience gives me that challenge that I need. I'm very much a challenge guy, because if not, I get complacent. And that's not an excuse, and that's not something I'm bragging about, but through self-awareness, I realize I can put on cruise control very easily when I'm comfortable. And I'm starting to get comfortable in certain areas of basketball presenting. I want to get uncomfortable again. And putting me in the corporate world and putting a tie around my neck will make me uncomfortable.
So that tie around your neck, you know, the wardrobe thing was something that I also noticed. The Skittle-colored Fruit Loops outfits, yes, that you used to wear. Obviously, that's got to change a little bit.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that in terms of kind of changing the whole image of what, you know, obviously what you wore before was very planned. There was a reason for it. It was the audience that you were speaking to. I get it. But now with the new audience, you know, what changes do you have to make?
Well, I definitely have to make some changes. And I probably went a couple years too long with the tights and the Skittle color sneakers. My reason for doing that was always to connect with the players. That, I mean, literally, I would show up to do one of my cutting edge clinics and players would come up and comment on my shoes. And it was a way to create a connection with someone that I'd never met. And when you create a connection, now I'm starting to build trust. So I was in a business of having to establish credibility and trust with someone I'm meeting for the first time. So I found that if I dressed and walked and talked kind of like a player, it lowered that barrier of them feeling uncomfortable around me. So that was the reason for doing that. In the corporate world, it's going to be different, because I want to stay very authentic to who I am as a person. And I've always had, whether you like it or not, kind of a flair for fashion. And I like zigging when other people zag. I mean, I'm 41 years old and I have a mohawk right now. Like that's just who I am. And I don't want to hide that or run for that, but I want to be very respectful that I'm entering an industry where they have different standards and guidelines and dress codes. So I want to walk a fine balance. I am not a three-piece suit Armani type of guy. I'm a nice jeans, a tie, shirt, and blazer, and some Jordans kind of guy, and I feel like that's who I am. And if someone's bringing me in as a speaker, they should be bringing me in to be my true, authentic self. And that doesn't mean I'm a good fit for everyone. So there may be some organizations that say, hey, the way this guy walks and talks and dresses is not for us, but I'm okay with that. I'm at peace with that and secure enough to know. But I want to be taken serious, and I want people to know that I'm a professional, but I want to balance that with my authentic brand and who I believe I am.
So now the why you question. Let's say I'm Tim Cook from Apple, and we happen to get in an elevator together, and I ask you, you know, what it is you do. What's your pitch? What's your pitch for a company to bring you in?
You know, Drew's coined the term unseen hours, and I love that. And as I think about it, and I'm going to steal that straight out of his playbook, I've seen what the greats do in unseen hours. I've been very fortunate, not only at Montrose and DeMatha, but my work with Nike, with Jordan Brand, with USA Basketball, to be around and hear and see firsthand stories of Kobe Bryant and Coach K and Steve Nash, and spend, you know, an inordinate amount of time with a guy like Jay Billis or Jay Williams. So I've been able to see what the best people in the game of basketball, coaches and players, do during unseen hours. And now I want to be the curator and the light that shines that into another group. So I would tell Tim Cook, you know, the best players and coaches in the game of basketball, I've had a chance to see what makes them great. And I want to share that stuff with you and the folks at Apple to make sure that you guys continue to be great in what you do and to make sure that your team at Apple is doing what they need to do in the unseen hours to make you guys the best that you can be. So I consider myself very much a curator of what I've learned from everybody else.
Speaking of curating, what is your process in terms of creating these presentations? What from the creation of the content to getting ready to go on stage, you know, what take me through what you do.
For the first month when I decided this was something I wanted to do, I literally just did a daily brain dump. I went back and I literally looked and went to every clinic that I had been a part of, every camp, everything and said, all right, was there any story or lesson that I remembered from that? I'm very thankful that I'm a pretty good note taker. So I had just pages and pages and pages of notes that I've taken. You know, I have lunch with a Kevin Eastman and I'm writing down 10 pages worth of notes. You know, spend some time with George Raveling and I'm writing pages of notes. So I went back and did a brain dump of all of that stuff. And then I ran it through a filter of what stuff in here is actionable and is a lesson that would serve the new audience that I want. And I would take those things and I would kind of put them in what I call modules. So, you know, under leadership, here's 15 stories or lessons that I've learned and here's who I've learned them from. Under teamwork, same thing. Under culture, same thing. And now I've got this kind of a la carte menu of everything that I've learned. And now it's kind of piecing them together. So which stories do I think are most powerful? Which action items and lessons do I think are most powerful to get my message across and kind of taking those things and it's taking some workshopping and figuring out, okay, what's the best way to open up one of my talks? What's the best way to close one of my talks? What stories, because I want to make sure there's a flow to what I do. You know, the way that I look at keynote speaking, I'm part entertainer. Part of it is people just want to hear a story about Kobe Bryant or Coach K. Like, that's neat to them. But I want to be an educator. I want to make sure that they're leaving going, man, if I do these three things Alan said, I will be a better leader. And if I'm a better leader, then everything in my life will improve. So that's kind of been the process. But the cool part is it's an ongoing process. You know, I've given about a dozen keynote talks to this point. And where I'm proud to say is the most recent one I've given is better than the first one that I did. So I'm making improvement. And that's because I film everything, I study it, and then I try to workshop it. And as you know, I'm a huge fan of the stand-up comedy genre. And I think as orators, stand-up comics are just, they're on another level as far as their preparation, their execution, and the way that they workshop material. So that's kind of how I approach it. You know, I'll give a keynote tomorrow, I'll film it, and I'll go back and say, okay, what stuff worked? What stuff needs to be tweaked? Is there anything I can add to this, or what should I take away? And keep refining and repeating and refining and repeating.
I would file these next few questions under the kind of getting to know you, getting to know the man behind the tie.
Sure.
Questions. First, what's the toughest decision you've had to make as a father?
Oh, boy. You know, for me, going through the divorce process makes what I've gone through possibly different to anybody that's listening that's, you know, like yourself, still happily married. So not as much a decision, but understand that when I was going through a divorce, that my children always had to come first. Now, that should sound obvious to any parent, but there's a lot of people whose behavior is not what they actually believe. You know, they say that their children come first, but their schedules, their calendars tell us otherwise. Again, that's something else that I've learned from you. So learning that as passionate as I am about my work, my children have to come first. So my parenting schedule and my connection time with my children goes on my calendar first. Everything I do for Pure Sweat and now for the Alan Stein Jr. brand is all secondary to that. So making sure that my priorities are always in order. And I don't mean that like that was a tough decision, but having the clarity to make that decision, I think has been the best thing that I've done so far as a father. Luckily at this point, I mean, fatherhood's been a blast. I mean, as you know, it's exhausting, but it's also extremely fulfilling. But I haven't had to make any real, like, poignant decisions at this point. I'm sure that's right around the corner, especially when the kids hit to be teenagers. But I think knowing that they're first in my life is what's been the best for me.
How about the toughest decision you've had to make in business, in your business life?
You know, one of the ones that I got right was deciding to absolve Stronger Team and become a part of Pure Sweat Basketball. And I look at that, and again, that was a lot through your leadership. one of the best things that I've ever done, because it allowed me to streamline a lot of what I was doing and be more efficient. So now that I'm basically, my role at Pure Sweat now is to provide content, is to train the trainer, train the coach, and educate the player and the parents, and not have to get caught up in the minutia of running the business. That's what you do for us and do so brilliantly. So that was a great decision. I don't have a lot of business acumen. I know that sounds really funny to say. I use common sense as my guiding force with most of what I do. And thankfully, I've been blessed with decent common sense. So to me, when I look at a decision, I'm thinking, okay, is this going to take me further in my career and or enrich my life and make me happier? That's the first one. And then second, I mean, could this potentially have a negative impact over anyone that I work with or care about? And as long as the answer to yes is very, very likely, and the answer to two is very, very, very unlikely, then I just go with it. And that's how I make most of my decisions.
Who in your life has changed you for the better? Or I guess I should say either in a negative way or a positive way. So someone in your life who has changed you based on a good thing they did for you, or something they modeled for you, or even a negative one that's changed the way you do things.
You know, I'm an eternal optimist and positive. So there's certainly, I've had some negative relationships and negative people in my life, and I take those as lessons learned. But I also believe that people will always come and go in your life. So I tend to focus on the people that have helped. I mean, obviously it's awkward because you're sitting here. You've been a main pillar, both as a friend, as a mentor, and as, you know, as a colleague. Same with Drew. You know, it's funny because I think when people hear the word mentor, they always assume that the mentor needs to be older than the mentee. And that's not true. I mean, as we all joke, I mean, I'm 15 years older than Drew, but Drew has taught me as much as anybody, just through his own work ethic and his grit and his relentlessness in pursuit of his craft. So the Pure Sweat family as a whole has been unbelievably valuable. But again, you talk about, you know, Tate's Lock and Kevin Eastman and George Raveling and Jay Billis. There have just been so many people that have been kind enough to pour into my life to help me. That's why I feel obligated to do the same thing to the group that's coming up behind. And to me, that's always been one of my favorite part of the coaching fraternity, is coaches enjoy helping other coaches. And I want that mentality to spread to the corporate world, because from what I've been told, that's not always the case. That the corporate world can sometimes be dog eat dog. It's you versus me. And it doesn't need to be. It needs to be you plus me, not you versus me. And I'm hoping that as I've hopefully left a thumbprint on youth basketball with some of these thoughts and philosophies, I'm hoping I can make a slight shift in the corporate world with saying, hey, this is the attitude you guys need to have. Coaches are a fraternity or a sorority, depending on how you want to look at it. And that's how the corporate world can still function at a very high level if they approach it the same way.
Besides people not putting their shopping carts back where they belong, which is a well-documented pet peeve of yours, what are some of your biggest pet peeves just in general?
People that worry about things that they don't have control over, and that usually falls under making excuses. So, you know, Tony Robbins, I believe he was the one that originally said it, but it could have been a Jim Rohn, was something that none of us lack resources. What you lack is resourcefulness. So people that complain about things, it doesn't add any value. I mean, at the end of the day, you control your attitude and your effort. And it's been proven time and time again that your attitude and your effort are enough to get you where you need to go. So put your focus into that. So, you know, the old coaching adage, you know, either you correct it or you accept it. It just bothers me when people complain about things that they can change themselves. Like, if you can change it, then stop complaining about it. So that's certainly a pet peeve. It's a far second to the shopping carts not being put back. But I think that's probably one of the big ones. And I know that's on a micro level or macro level.
Clearly, you have all of these attributes, but just in general, which is more important to you in speaking? And there's a few here. Likeability or polish?
Likeability, for sure, because I think people will excuse a lack of polish if you're likable. Now, that doesn't mean you're a court jester and you're up there begging for people's approval, but I think likability is extremely important. You know, as I've mentioned, I'm a huge stand-up comedy fan, and I recently watched Louis C.K.'s new Netflix special called 2017. And this is what's so remarkable. First of all, he's unbelievably polished, one of the most polished comedians ever. And he talks about things like abortion and suicide, two of the most dark taboo topics, but he somehow finds a way to do it and remain likable. I'm not saying that you might not like what he says, but his energy is very likable. Like, there's no one throwing rotten tomatoes at him while he's talking about these very dark topics. So I think likability is extremely important, and that part's harder to achieve. Polish will come with experience. Polish will come with rehearsal and with practice. So I think the likability and the passion and people knowing that you're there because you care is absolutely the most important.
Speaking of passion or knowledge?
I'm a passion guy, but you have to be willing to offer some type of knowledge. Like, to me, that's one of the downsides, and I don't even really like being referred to as a motivational speaker, because I kind of laugh at that old Chris Farley skit of Matt Foley in a van down by the river. Like, I don't want to be known as a guy that's just there to rah-rah people. And I say this humbly, I can do that. I know that I can get people excited, and I know that I can get people pumped up. But are they going to be pumped up after lunch, after I've been gone for an hour? If the answer is no, then I didn't do anything to make change. So I think the knowledge is important, but you need a combination. You know, I know lots of folks in the performance training world that know everything about the human body, about biomechanics, about movement, but their communication skills are very poor, so they can never get that message across. So it's like, you know, the tree that falls in the woods when no one's around, does it make a sound? It doesn't matter how much you know if you can't find a way to share it. So I would say in this one, you have to have the knowledge, but the passion is what's going to get people to buy into your knowledge.
Presence or position, meaning your title, who you are type of thing?
Presence without question. Yeah. You know, to steal a Simon Sinek quote, you know, leadership is a choice. So just because someone says you're the president of the company, that doesn't make you a leader. That gives you a title, that gives you authority, that gives you rank, but it doesn't mean you're a leader. And that, without question, the janitor could be a better leader than the CEO if they choose to be. So I think the presence is most important. But more times than not, your presence will end up turning into a title. If you're present in where you are and you show great leadership skills, you will ascend and you will climb that ladder without question.
All right, last one of these, script or feel?
A little bit of both. And this is what I'm working through now. So I script out my keynotes and rehearse them. But the goal is to rehearse them to the point that it all goes on feel, and that I'll say something, and depending on the audience's reaction, I'll know whether to keep going with that or to pivot and maybe make a change. So I think it's so important to have a feel for your audience. Nothing is worse than a speaker that's just up there droning and reading off of PowerPoint slides, and they're not resonating with the audience. So you always have to remember, as a speaker, when I'm standing on stage, the only reason I'm there is to serve the people in the audience, and I have to have a feel for what's working and what's not, what they want more of and what they want less of. So that part, I think, is extremely important, but you have to go in prepared. If I'm giving a keynote tomorrow, you better believe I've rehearsed that thing for hundreds of hours, and I've done homework on the company to make sure that I'm customizing it for them. So I want to be scripted and prepared, but once I get there, I want to have a feel. And as you know, through coaching and through parenting, feel only comes through experience. Like, I mean, right now, if someone's been in the corporate speaking world for 20 years, they probably have a better feel for it than I do at the moment. They might not have more passion than me. They might not even have more knowledge than me, but they may have a better feel just through experience. And I'll get that as I continue to climb this ladder.
All right. Last getting to know you question.
Yes.
If money were no longer an object for you, where do you live? How do you spend your time, and whose life or lives do you change?
Wow, I love that. You know, being a co-parent of divorce, we've agreed that we'll stay in the DC area until the kids are grown. If that was not a factor, I love the West Coast. I love Arizona. I love Las Vegas. I love San Diego and Santa Barbara and LA. First of all, I love the weather. I'm much more of a beach bum than I am a snow type of guy. But I just love the laid back, loose, kind of freeing atmosphere of those areas. So I would probably live somewhere on the West Coast without question. If money wasn't an object, I would still be doing the things that I'm doing now. I get so much satisfaction out of serving. I mean, I love, as I've mentioned, working with coaches, but in my limited experience giving keynote talks, it's an unbelievably intoxicating feeling to be on stage talking to people that are kind of hanging on your every word. So I might not do everything at the breakneck pace that I currently do it, but if money was no object, I would still be doing what I'm doing because that makes me who I am, but I would also continue to pour into my own children and have that connection with them and, you know, coach T-ball and take Lila to dance class and do those things and find that healthy balance. But you know what's kind of funny? My quality of life now is as good as it's ever been. And I'm far from wealthy, but I no longer use money as my barometer for what I'm trying to achieve or for success. Like right now, I do what I love. I work with the people that I love to work with. And yeah, my life's pretty awesome.
How would you respond? And this is just kind of the last question for someone thinking about bringing you in as a speaker.
Yeah.
How would you respond to a large corporation's rebuttal that you have no corporate or bit large company experience on your resume?
I would tell them that that's actually a benefit, that I'm going to come in with a fresh perspective and fresh eyes and share things with them that they've never seen before or heard before because they've lived in their box as I've lived in mine. And now I'm going to take the things that I absolutely believe transcend any industry, and I'm going to share those. So what I'm offering them is a fresh perspective. So they should actually be thankful that I haven't looked through the world through their lens yet, because I'm hoping to give them ideas that they've never seen or heard. And same thing, you know, a lot of basketball coaches and teams are doing that. You know, John Calipari brings in speakers from the military to come in, guys that have never shot a layup in their life, but can talk about leadership and teamwork principles from the military and how that can help, you know, University of Kentucky's basketball team. So I would say the exact same thing. It's actually a benefit that I've never been in your world, because now I can share things with you that you've never seen.
If someone wants to bring you in to speak, what's the best way to have to get that done?
You know, the cool part about this is now I have two distinct pillars in my life. I've got Pure Sweat Basketball, which is anything someone would need for the performance side of things. But anything on leadership, teamwork, culture, communication, and on the corporate side will all be at allensteinjr.com. That'll all be all of my social handles. I certainly hope that there's some crossover, because if coaches are listening to this, I don't want them to think that everything I do on that side is just for corporate folks. I mean, it's leadership and teamwork that could serve a high school coach just as well as it could serve Tim Cook at Apple. So I'm hoping that folks choose to follow and subscribe to both sides of both of these platforms, because I think they'll serve each other. But yes, there's actually an inquiry form that someone could go to, allensteinjr.com, fill that out, and would love to talk and be able to serve you and your organization.
There you have it. We hope you've enjoyed this in-depth series with Alan and feel like you've gotten to know him a little better throughout the week. I'd like to close the series by letting everyone know that Alan had no prior knowledge of the questions I was going to ask in any of the episodes. I think you'll agree that his self-awareness and ability to articulate who he is and what he is about is nothing short of remarkable. Next week, I'll be handing the mic back over to Alan to resume his hosting duties. Until next time, let's get back in the gym.